Good morning. Today's daf in Megillah's Chaf Gimel. We're in Chaf Beis Amud Beis. We're right in the middle of the Amud, and we're going to go back to our incident regarding Rav and some of his first times in Shul in Bavel. We are here now in the third parak of the Masechta, and the third parak of Megillah is dedicated to mostly the topic of Kriyas HaTorah. So we're familiar. Every time we assemble, not every time, a lot of times when we assemble, so there is a mitzvah of Kriyas HaTorah, Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, Yontif, Yom Kippur, Tanit Sibor. So there are an assortment of days in which we are commanded, most probably Midrabbanan, to read from the Torah. So all the rules and regulations of Aliyahs and how to break it up and where to stop and where to start. So all that comes from our parak over here. We yesterday tried to ascertain, as we were trying to figure out exactly how many Aliyahs to insert on a Tanit Sibor. So although the Mishnah was very clear, but the Mishnah conspicuously left out Tanit Sibor in terms of the number of Aliyahs that go on a Tanit Sibor. On a Monday, Thursday, and Shabbos afternoon, it's 3 Aliyahs. On Chol HaMoed, it's 4 Aliyahs. On Yontif, it's 5 Aliyahs. Yom Kippur, 6, and Shabbos, 7. So that the Mishnah was particularly clear about. The Mishnah had nothing to say regarding Tanit Sibor. So we know there's Kriyas HaTorah in Tanit Sibor, but how many Aliyahs are there? So it's unknown from the Mishnah. So the Gemara thought that we know an episode with Rav where Rav came to Bavel on a Tanit Sibor, and so he got an Aliyah. He made the opening bracha. He didn't make the chasima. So the Gemara tried to figure out what happened over there. So the Gemara for a moment entertained the idea that he got the third Aliyah, and the reason why he didn't make a bracha acharon, if you will, is because there was another Aliyah after that. And the Gemara said it's conjecture, and it's probably not what happened. Probably what happened is he got kohen. He's not a kohen. Okay, that's true, but. In other words, he's a gadol, and the gadol is going to get the first aliyah. That's most probably what happened. Okay. Anyway, so from there, so the Gemara did not conclude anyway by Tanit Sibor, as we know, the three aliyahs. The Gemara quoted a brisa yesterday that conclusively taught us that on a Tanit Sibor there are three aliyahs. There was another practice of Rav that was a little bit strange, and that is that he didn't do nefilas apayim after you say Shemona Esrei. So for Shachar, for Mincha. So we do what's called nefilas apayim. We fall down on our head. But basically the idea is that we petition Kadosh Baruch Hu, we supplicate more. There's a Ramban in the beginning of Parshas Vayigash. So there's a Ramban in the beginning of Parshas Vayigash where the Ramban says very clearly that that's exactly what Yehuda was doing with Yosef. And he didn't know it was Yosef, but that's exactly what he was doing. If you see the psukim, it goes on and on, you know, this is a story, here's what happened, so forth and so on. So the Ramban says tachanun. In other words, that's what tachanun is. Tachanun is supplication. You're just begging. So after Shemona Esrei, so we go into tachanun. So, in the time of the Gemara, so it not only was tachanun, but it also involved nefilas apayim. You go down on the floor for it. So we do a slightly modified version of that, and by the end of the sugya is short, it's not a long sugya, so we're going to have a somewhat better understanding of why we do a modified version of it. Somewhat better understanding. We're not going to have a great understanding, at least from the Gemara, but it'll be enhanced. We'll definitely get a little bit out of it. But anyway, so that was done after Shemona Esrei. So Rav, when he went to the shul in Bavel and Tanit Sibor, so in addition to getting the Aliyah, the other thing that we learned is that he didn't do Nefilas Apayim. Okay, so that's what we saw. And so with the Gemara now, before going back to the halachas of Kriyas HaTorah, so we're just going to stop for a moment and just notice this and ask the simple question, why didn't he do Nefilas Apayim? And that's where we are in the Gemara. So we can find ourselves now on Chav Beis Amud Beis, halfway down in the Amud, where it says Gufa. So literally the midpoint of the Amud. Gufa. So Rav Ikla Bava Batani Sibra Kam Krab Sifra Pasach Baruch Kasim Lo Baruch. Okay, so the first part we already covered. The Gemara's not going to be focusing on that. Again, he got an aliyah. We don't know which one, but he got an aliyah. He made the opening bracha. He didn't make the closing bracha. Good. And then the other thing is that Rav did nefilas apayim. Sorry, everybody did nefilas apayim except for Rav. He didn't. So my time, Rav lo nafal al pay. So the Gemara now asks a really simple question: and why not? Everyone else is doing it, and you're supposed to be doing it. So why didn't he do it? So ritzvah shel avadim haiso. So the Gemara is going to give a couple of approaches. This is approach number one. So approach number one is that the shul had a stone floor. And Vitanya, we learned in the Braisa, Ben Vimaskus lo sitnu b'artzachem lishtachavos aleha. So the Gemara is citing the Pasuk, tells us that when you have a stone floor, you can't bow down on a stone floor. So presumably it is somehow connected to Avodah Zarah. The pasuk is not perfectly clear, but nevertheless, there's an issue in the Torah that one's not allowed to bow in such a scenario. So now, just as long as we're quoting the Brace and we're quoting the Limud, so it happens to be that a distinction is drawn between a stone floor outside the Beis HaMikdash and versus a stone floor in the Beis HaMikdash. Outside the Beis HaMikdash, so it's an Isser to bow down. In the Beis HaMikdash, there is a mitzvah to bow down. Okay, but aside from that, so Rav obviously in Bavel, so you're well outside of the Makam HaMikdash, so there's an Isser. So the Gemara says, Kidu'ula. And by the way, this is also in connection with what Ula taught us. Amar Ula lo asra Torah ela rispa shel avanim bavad. The Isser is only limited to rispa shel avanim. If the floor is made out of something else, so then it would be okay. Okay, we have a minhag on the times that we actually do, we do bow down on the floor, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So we have a minhag that we should create some sort of chatzitza between us and the floor, even if the floor is not made out of stone. Okay, but that's a halachic discussion, obviously based on our Gemara, but a little bit off topic. Anyway, but what comes out over here is that Rav had a stone floor in front of him, and that's why he didn't bow. To which the Gemara is going to ask the question, which hopefully everyone here is wondering. So, the Gemara says, fine. So now we just learned an Isser together. So once we've learned this Isser together, so that means nobody should be banged on the floor, meaning if the entire floor plan of the shul is made up of stone, so nobody should be bowing. And so it really doesn't help us in terms of understanding. So the Gemara says, Kamei de Rav Havai. So the Gemara gives a new kimta. The Gemara says, okay, the stone was just in front of Rav and in front of nobody else. Okay, it's a new kimta. So v'leizel agabi tzipor v'linpol alape. So the Gemara says, okay, so with this new kimta, so now I'll ask a simple question. So move. Okay, so in other words, you can't bow right now because currently where you are, there's a stone floor, and nowhere else in the shul is there a stone floor. So move your spot. So lo by limitrach tzibura. So the Gemara says, because it would be tircha de tzibura. So he would get up and he would have to move locations. Everyone would have to stand up. He didn't want everyone to do that for him. As a result of that, he felt that it'd be better not to do Nefilas Apayim. Okay, that is all approach number one. We learned an Isser together, but in order to get to this first answer, so a number of akimtas had to be set up. Okay, that's a first approach. The Gemara gives now a second approach. The second approach is that let's assume the floor plan of the shul was totally made up of stone. Let's assume that. And now, so we don't have to give such an ukimta. Good. Now, as far as Rav is concerned, so why didn't he bow down? Because he didn't just bow down. He did what's called Pishu Yadayim V'Raglayim. He went totally horizontal on the floor. And Ula says that this Isser that we're learning together, that you're not allowed to bow down a stone floor, and so if you're just bowing, if you're just bending over, that's fine. The Isser is only limited to Pishu Yadayim V'Raglayim. Okay, and presumably that's because in the Beis HaMikdash, that's what you would be doing in the Beis HaMikdash. So that means to say, outside the base of Mikdash, so you are going to be banned from doing that activity. So the Gemara is now assuming that the reason why Rav did not do Nefilas Apayim is because his version of Nefilas Apayim was Pishu Yadayim V'Raglayim. He went fully horizontal. Everyone else did not go fully horizontal. So therefore, there was no Isser for everybody else. But because of Rav's minug of how to do Nefilas Apayim, so for him it was an Isser. So the Gemara says, V'lipol alapay, V'lo la'avi Pishu Yadayim V'Raglayim. So the Gemara says, no, so I got a great suggestion. And that is, why don't you just simply conform to what everyone else is doing? Everyone else is just bowing, so you should just bow. So the Gemara says, "Lo mishanim minhage." The Gemara says, "Yeah, but that's not his minhag. His minhag was to do Pishu Yadayim V'Raglayim. He didn't want to change his minhag. So for him, preferential would be not to do Nefilas Apayim at all, rather than to change his minhag." Okay, I was right, just a Baal Batish question from my part. But in other words, why would he be allowed to do Pishu Yadayim V'Raglayim? If everyone else is just doing a bow and he wants to do it differently, so it sounds a little bit like Lotus's go to do. Okay, but we're talking about a minhag over here. Maybe a minhag is different. I'm unsure. Anyway, but that's this Gemara's second approach. So far, we have now two approaches in terms of why Rav did not do Nefilas Apayim, either because of the configuration, the floor plan of the shul, or because he had a different minhag in terms of how he bowed, which would have been prohibited on a stone floor. Ebay, same with the Gemara, gives a third approach to this problem. Adam Chashav Shani. So it is nothing to do with a stone floor, nothing to do with the Isser of Evan Maskis. It has to do with the fact that he's an Adam Chashav. And therefore what? So Kid the Rabbi Elazar, Dam Rabbi Elazar. An Adam Chashav, Ashali Pol HaPanav, Ela Im Kein, Nena Ke Yoshua Benun. So when you're an Adam Chashav, so people assume that you have a Kadosh Baruch Hu's full attention. Now, if you were to bow down, prostrate yourself on the floor in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and you don't get answered, so it's unbecoming. It simply doesn't look good. Because people think that you're not Adam Chashav. People think that you have a Kadosh Baruch Hu's full attention and he's not answering you. So if you're someone like Yehoshua ben Nun, you know you're going to be answered. That's great. But otherwise, an Adam Chashav. So admittedly, by the way, this is an extraordinarily limited halacha. This is only applying to someone who's an Adam Chashav. But still, within the Hilchas Adam Chashav, so a person shouldn't mean bowing down. So by Yehoshua, so Akash Baruch Hu says to Yehoshua, okay, good. So you bow down to me. Okay, so get up and let's move forward. Meaning, Akash Baruch Hu responded to Yehoshua. But if you do not have that assurance that Akash Baruch Hu is going to respond to you, and you're an Adam Chashav, so therefore you shouldn't do Nefilas Apayim. Okay, so this is now going to be a third approach to our problem. How come Rav didn't do Nefilas Apayim? So either number one, because of the floor plan, number two, because he had a different minhag of how he did Nefilas Apayim, or number three, because he's an Adam Chashav, having nothing to do with the floor. Tan Rabbanan. The Gemara now points out that in terms of prostration, in terms of bowing to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so there are three different positions, so to say, of bowing, and described different ways in the Torah. Kida al Apayim. So when we're discussing Kida, so you are planting your face in the ground. So Shenamra v'tikot b'asheva apayim aretz. Okay, b'asheva was petitioning David HaMelech, and so she bows down. And the word over there is v'tikot. Tosus is convinced over here that it's not based on the pasuk, meaning it's a mesorah. The pasuk itself doesn't really indicate what exactly the positioning would be. Just it's a mesorah. But anyway, but we have the different terms, so the different terms are reflecting different types of prostration. Kriya al birkayim, kriya is when you're bending your knees. V'chinu amra michra al birkavi. Ishtachavai zo pishi adam v'regalayim. And when you see the word ishtachavai, that's talking about fully horizontal, laying flat on the floor. Okay, so here the pasuk does kind of indicate it, but regardless. So there are three different ways in terms of where you prostrate. It would seem to be that they are appropriate for different times. Unclear from the Gemara when each one is appropriate, for what particular occasion. We just saw together that for Nefilas Apayim, there were various minhagim for Nefilas Apayim. Rav had a minhag of Pishi Adam V'Raglayim. Everyone else clearly did not have that minug. So it's the Gemara does not give real clarity in terms of when each of these positions is appropriate. Levi Achve Kida Kame Derebi V'Idla. The Gemara notes that on one occasion, so Levi tried to do this Kida, which requires dexterity and strength and balance. And what happened, unfortunately, is that Levi probably, in general, could do it. But when he did in front of Rebbe, so Rashi describes, he had to shift his weight. And as he was doing this very difficult maneuver, so basically he dislocated his... Okay, I know it's too soon. So the... so he dislocated his hip. So v'haka garmalei. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. That's not what is the reason why Levi was injured. And in fact, v'amar Rebbe Lazar lola ma'itich adam dvarim kalpe mala shari adam gadol itich dvarim kalpe mala. V'itla umanu Levi. So the Gemara notes, this is the Gemara in Tanis. It wasn't that long ago that we did this Gemara, and that was Levi said things that were disrespectful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, Rashi over here reminds us, basically, we went through all those incidents and stories in the third parak of the Masechta, and one of the incidents that we went through together was that Levi basically said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I can't believe you're not allowing it to rain. Where are you? Okay, loose translation, but... You know, he was disrespectful in the way he spoke to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the Gemara says as a result of that, so Levi had this happen to him. So the Gemara says so how are we attributing the accident, his injury, to what he did in front of Rebbe, when meanwhile we know what the real reason is? So the Gemara's answer is very simple: Hava Hagarmalei. So the Gemara says, well, no. In other words, we know what the root issue was. And then when it actually manifests is when he put himself in a makam sakana. Okay, we have this idea. It happened numerous times, right? The Mishnah in Shabbos, we're all familiar, right? That when a woman's bishas leida, so at that point in time, so if she's not careful about certain things, so then at a time when she is most vulnerable, so that's when it's going to come, and all the those specific affairs are going to come to basically take effect. So here as well. In other words, so what Levi did, in other words, the cause of the dislocation is because of the way he spoke. But when it actually occurred is going to be at a time when he's vulnerable. So now the Gemara ends off this entire discussion of Nefilas Apayim by pointing out the practices of Abai and Rava. So Abai and Rava, so they were obviously, they were Adam Chashuv, right? Anashim Chashuvim. So they were very significant people. So we learned together that when you're an Adam Chashuv, so you shouldn't be bowing down unless you know you're going to be answered. So on the other hand, however, they didn't want to not bow down. So what do? They tilted over to the side. Rashi, Al Tzi Dehem, Velo Noflim Al Panei Mamish. So they wouldn't go full prostration. They would just simply do it to the side, right? Even if I were to show you what it was, I couldn't because I simply don't know exactly what they did. I just simply know that it was some sort of compromised position, meaning not fully down, but not fully up as well, not fully erect as well. And Rashi writes, Lefi Shein Adam Chashav, Rashali Paul Panav, because this goes back to what we learned just moments earlier, meaning that when you're an Adam Chashav, so you shouldn't be fully bowing down, because again, the expectation that people have of you is that if you were to do that, Akash Baruch Hu is going to answer you. Akash Baruch Hu didn't answer you. So then it's too confusing for people. Okay, so effectively, don't do it. But Abai and Levi, I'm sorry, Abai and Rava didn't want to ignore it in total. So they came to this compromised position. And probably, meaning it's not really it's not a good launching point for our minug, because in other words, we're talking about all of us, right? I'm not another Mechashev. So what we do is we do this compromised position, meaning after Shemoneh Esrei, when we do Nefilas Apayim, so we're not down on the floor, we're not in full horizontal mode. So what we do is we tilt to the side. Okay, right, like Abai and Rava. So yes and no, because in other words, the only reason why they have that compromised position is because they're not Adam Chashev. It's certainly not true by all of us, but I venture a guess that our Gemara over here certainly is somehow connected to our minug. And by the way, for Ashkenazim, right, I'm one of them. So for Ashkenazim, so the Rama writes that our minug is to tilt on the left side. However, when we're wearing a tefillin, so out of covered for our tefillin, so then we should go to the right side and we should tilt to the right side. But when you're not wearing tefillin, so then the preferred position is on the left side. Okay, anyway, we are on Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. We're at the very top of the Amud. And we go back now to our Aliyah count. So, how many Aliyahs? So, it depends on the day, as we learned at the beginning of this parak. And so now we are going to revisit this and discuss it a little bit more. B'yom Tov Chamisha U'b'yam HaKippurim Shisha Masi Samana Lo Rabbi Shema V'lo Rabbi Akiva. Who is the author of our Mishnah? So, it seems to be neither Rabbi Akiva nor Rabbi Yishma. D'etanyi V'lo Antona B'ayis B'yom Tov Chamisha V'yam HaKippurim Shisha V'shab Shiva Im Pochas Me'em V'yam Osifim Olem Div Rabbi Yishma. So, I read that quickly, but Rabbi Shmuel is almost identical to our Mishnah, but with one notable difference. In our Mishnah on Shabbos, Hosafos are allowed. Rabbi Shmuel says Hosafos are not allowed. So clearly our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Shmuel. And Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Yom Tov Chamisha V'yam HaKippurim Shiva V'Shabbos Shisha, Ein Pochas Mehem Aval Mosifin Aleihem. Now according to Rabbi Akiva, clearly not holding like our Mishnah, because Rabbi Akiva has Shabbos and Yom Kippur flipped. Shabbos you have 6 Aliyahs, and Yom Kippur you have 7 Aliyahs, and that's clearly not our Mishnah. So money, Rabbi Yishmael, Kasha Tosefetzi, Rabbi Kiva, Kasha Shisha V'Shiva. So obviously the difficulties are, is our Mishnah cannot be going like Rabbi Yishmael, because our Mishnah advocates for Hosafos on Shabbos, you can, and Rabbi Kiva says you cannot, and meanwhile, sorry, Rabbi Yishmael says you cannot, and meanwhile, Rabbi Kiva, so has Shabbos and Yom Kippur flipped from our Mishnah. So our Mishnah seems to be going like neither position. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Atana Debe Rabbi Yishmael Hi. Okay, so the Gemara says there's another Braisa, and our Mishnah is going to fit in with this other Braisa. Detan Debe Rabbi Yishmael, B'yom Tov, Chamisha B'yom HaKippur, M'shisha B'shab B'shiva, Ein Pochasim Mehen, Ava Mosifin Aleihem. So you're allowed to do Hosafos, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. So that's the sheet that Rabbi Yishmael is recording this Braisa. So hopefully you're wondering, wait one second, I'm so confused. We just learned Rabbi Yishmael in this Braisa, but we also just learned Rabbi Yishmael in the previous braisa. So kashi de Rabbi Shmuel de Rabbi Shmuel. Trey Tanai Aliba de Rabbi Shmuel. Okay, so the Gemara says, no, there's different masoras in terms of what exactly Rabbi Shmuel said, and they're slightly different. So the previous braisa had a slightly different version of Rabbi Shmuel where you're not allowed to make hosafas, not even on Shabbos. And the more recent braisa that we just saw is consistent with our Mishnah that you are allowed to make hosafas on Shabbos. A discussion to be had. We're not going to have it, but a discussion to be had in terms of what other days are you allowed to make hosafas. Can you make hosafas on Yantif? Can you make hosafas on Yom Kippur? Good. A discussion to be had. Certainly Shabbos, but the question of how far back can you go in terms of making hosafas. Mantan lahadetanya. Gemara says, okay, I'm going to show you a braisa, and who's the author? So first let's learn the braisa. B'yom tov ma'achrin lavo umimharin latzeis. So on Yantif, so you're going to go late to shul. No, just to clarify, not just you. Everybody, shul's going to start later. Okay, that's a better way to say it. So shul will start later on Yantif. So umimharin latzeis, and also right, people are going to be rushing out of shul, which again means not that you're going to leave early, but everyone's going to leave early, meaning no schlepping on Yantif. Now, what are the considerations over here? So Rashi writes, because on Yantif, so you're allowed to cook, which means that there's going to be preparation. And so therefore, in the early morning, so you're already going to start with the preparation. Okay, right? It sounds like women and men. In other words, I assume from the Gemara's perspective, it's not the women are going to shul, but whatever. In other words, there's food preparation to be done in the morning, and so therefore ma'achrin lavo. And then in terms of ma'amharin latze, so that you understand, meaning we have a meal to go to. So nobody wants to shlep shul when there's a meal to go to. Good. B'yom kippur ma'amharin lavo ma'achrin latze. Now, as far as Yom Kippur is concerned, so there's no eating. We don't have to worry about eating on Yom Kippur. Oh, we got a break. So that means to say now that you can go to shul early. That's ma'amharin lavo. Ma'achrin latze, and there's no meal to go home to. Okay, so schlepping on Yom Kippur is perfectly fine. Right, it's the Bryce over here is not, you know, the Bryce over here is not telling us whether in other words, by Ne'ila, obviously, and by Marva and Yom Kippur, obviously people, you know, are obviously interested in going home. Most probably the Bryce here is describing, right, the Shachris Musaf, in other words, and it's running parallel with Shabbos and Yantif. Anyway, Uvi Shabbos Memarim Lavo Memarim Latzeis. And on Shabbos, so you go to shul early, and you leave shul early. And again, it's not just you, it's in other words, shul in general. So, and as Rashi points out over here, because on Shabbos there is no food preparation, all the food is already prepared before Shabbos, so now there's no reason why in the morning, you wake up in the morning, what else should you be doing? In other words, you should be running to shul. Rashi says over here, and in Shabbos, what should you shoot for? So you should shoot for saying Shema Shmoneh Esrei, Kiv Asikin. Okay, so interesting Mar Malcolm Rashi right here in Ardaf says that on Shabbos you really should try to make Vasikin. Okay. Everything is relative. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, everybody goes to shul on a much earlier hour. And their meal starts at a much earlier hour. Here in America, so the minhag here is to move things much later. Okay, anyway. But certainly, though, the Braisa is advocating for an earlier start on Shabbos. Now, but on Shabbos also, but we do have a meal to go to. So again, so no schlepping by Shabbos. In other words, let people out early so that they can go home to their meal. Now, good, so the general tendencies of where shul should start and shul should end on Yantiv, on Yom Kippur, and on Shabbos. Who is the author of this braisa? The Gemara has such an unbelievable suggestion. Yekis are going to love this suggestion. So, Lema Rabbi Kiva Disle Gavri Yaseira. Ah, so it must be Rabbi Kiva. Why? Because on Rabbi Kiva, Yom Kippur, you have an extra aliyah. Oh, so for that extra aliyah, so ma'achrin latse. So now we're going to be in shul a lot longer because of that extra aliyah. Okay. So so that's what the Gemara is suggesting. Maybe that's the pshat in the braisa. The Gemara says it's not necessarily the pshat in the braisa. Afilo temer rabbi shmal danafish shidure diyuma. So the Gemara says no. It could be going like our Tana and I Shabbos. So Shabbos it says that we are mimharin we're mimharin lavo. Yeah, because davening on Shabbos is longer. We have a longer pesukah de Zimra. You have more even in the brachas of Shema. Whatever, davening is just longer. That's all. It doesn't not necessarily a reflection of the number of aliyahs that there are. Okay, hani shlosha chamisha v'shiva keneged mi. Okay, we did a little bit of this so far in this parak. We're going to do a little bit more, and that is ramazim. Okay, the numbers that we have over here. In other words, the 10 pesukim that are required to be leaned on. On a Monday and a Thursday and Shabbos afternoon. What does that correspond to? The three aliyahs, what does that correspond to? So that's discussions we had earlier in our perek. So over here, the idea that there are sometimes three aliyahs, sometimes five aliyahs, sometimes seven aliyahs. So where does that correspond to? What does that correspond to? Now, obviously, conspicuously absent from the Gemara's questioning over here is that there are days where there are four aliyahs, and there are days that there are six aliyahs. Why is the Gemara only focusing on the odd numbers? Why not the even numbers? Tosos is bothered by that. Anyway, but we're going to go on. Connected me. So, pligi bar Rav Yisuk bar Nachmin v'chad dame umana Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi. V'amri la Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi v'chad dame umana Rav Yisuk bar Nachmini. V'amri la Rabbi Shimon bar Nachmini. Okay, so various versions of who the machlokus is between, but regardless. Chad amar keneged birchas kohanim. So one say that the numbers are significant, the remes of the numbers are keneged birchas kohanim. So you look at the three brachas of the kohanim. So the first bracha is three words, second bracha is five words, third bracha is seven words. So that gets you 2, 3, 5, and 7. And again, I'll allow the darshanim to come along, I'm not one of them, and to go in to explain the connection between the birchas kohanim and the various aliyahs that are going to be allocated for these particular days. There's a connection. I'm just not ready. I'm not prepared to offer a connection. And Shiva Roy Pnei HaMelech. And the other position is that if you look at various courts of kings, so you're going to see throughout Tanakh, sometimes the court is made up of three. No, I don't mean a court meaning a judicial court. I'm just talking about advisors to the king. Sometimes you're going to find three of them. Sometimes you'll find five of them. Sometimes you'll find even seven of them. Really interesting Rashi over here. Rashi says, where are you going to find seven of them? By the court of Achashverosh. That's what Rashi writes right over here. Tosfos is a little bit astonished that would be a source. Okay. Anyway, so you could see Tosfos for that. Tani Rav Yosef Gimel Chamisha V'Shiva Shlosha Shomrei Asaf Chamisha Meroa Pnei HaMelech Shiva Roei Pnei HaMelech. Okay, good. Rav Yosef has a braisa that also reports this as well. That the 3, 5, and 7 correspond to the various advisors that are used by various kings throughout Tanakh. Sometimes 3, sometimes 5, sometimes 7. And over here, we're talking about a Dvar Malchus. In other words, we're going to be reading the Torah. So these numbers, therefore, are significant, 3, 5, and 7. Amalei Abaya Ada Ina Maitama Lo Parish Lanmar. So Abai was a little bit bothered. In other words, he turned to his rabbi and he said, I'm hearing this now for the first time. Like, how come you never told this to me before? So Amalei, so Rav Yosef says back to Abaye, Lo Havayadana Disrichisule. Umi Ba'isu Minai Milsav Lo Amalechu. So he says, I didn't know you were curious about this. Meaning, did you ever ask me a question and I didn't give you an answer? If you would have asked me, I would have told you. Okay, this exchange is not the only time it happens in Shas. This exchange happens a couple of occasions. Basically, the Musar Haskel is ask. And if your Rebbe will know, he'll tell you. Amar Yaakov Minala Rav Yehuda, Hani Shishad Yom Kippurim Keneged Me. Okay, what about the six of Yom Kippur? Is there any remez in Tanakh that gets us to the six of Yom Kippur? So Amarle Keneged Shisha Shamdu Miyamino Shel Ezra, Vishisha Mismolo. So we're going to show a pasuk together. We're going to see a pasuk together in Sefer Nehemiah that has six people standing to the right, six people standing to the left of Ezra. Shenemar Vayamod Ezra Asofer Al Migdal Eitz Asher Asul Idvar Vayamod Etzlo Matisya Vishama Vaniya Vuriya Vichilkiyahu Masiya Al Yeminau Umismolo Pidiyahu Mishael Umakia Vichashum Vichashbadna. And Zechariah and Mishlem and Mushlam. Okay, forgive my mispronunciation. So the Gemara says, good. So there are six on one side, six on the other side. So the Gemara says, great. Did you count the names? So if you'll notice on the left side, there were not six, but rather there were seven. Gemara's question. So Hani Shiva Havu, Hani Zechariah, Hani Mishalam, or Mishlam. Okay, good. So the Gemara says, good. So so Zechariah and Mishlam are one in the same person. By my Kari Lay Mishlam, did Mishlam be Ovadia? And the reason why it was called Mishlam is it's a nickname, right? We've had this many times now in our Masechta, that sometimes a person goes by two different names, and one of them is an adjective. It happens to be that Zechariah is, the way Rashi describes it, Tamim B'Ma'asav. Okay, he was a perfected individual. Okay, so that's how we arrived at that nickname. Yeah. Okay, Tana Rabbanan.
Why don't you learn 12 then?
Huh?
Why don't we have 12?
It's a remez, meaning it's not a makor.
It's 6 and 6.
It's a remez. These are Ramazim. They're not the actual Makaris. Okay. What's the connection between Ezra and Yom Kippur? Okay, good. I leave it for the Darshanim to tell you. I happen not to be one of them. So, Tana Rabbanan. Ha'kol olim leminyan sheva ve'afilu katan, ve'afilu isha. Aval amru chachamim, isha lo tikra besora, mimne kavra tzibur. Okay, so who can get an aliyah? So, ha'kol, everyone can get an aliyah. A cotton can get an aliyah, a woman can get an aliyah, But the Chacham said that a woman should get an aliyah, should not get an aliyah because it's not covered at Tzibur. So Ibai Lahu. Good. Next question of the Gemara. Maftir Maushiyala Laminyan Shiva. So we have something called the Maftir. Okay. This is one of those occasions, it happens numerous times, but this is one of those occasions where the Gemara assumes that we know there's something called a Maftir. The Gemara assumes that there's something called Haftarah. Okay. The Gemara gives no background, meaning what is Maftir? What is Haftarah? Meaning why are we reading Haftarah? So, well, from the Gemara itself, there is no clarity, meaning this is the time to clarify, meaning these are the Gemaras that discuss the halachas of Kriyas HaTorah. The next paragraph we're going to be talking about the halachas of Ashol. So, like, these are the times to clarify, and the Gemara does not give us any type of real clarification of why it is that we have this thing called Haftarah. I know we all know, but just to spell it out, so what we do every week is that we read a section of the Torah. Obviously, what we do is we look to finish the Torah by the end of the year, okay? And on the last day of Sukkot, we celebrate that, okay? And with every Kriyas HaTorah, so what we also do is that we read a section from Navi that thematically corresponds to that which we read in the Torah. Sometimes we are not interested in connecting it to the theme of the Torah, but rather we connect it to the theme of the day of the year or the time of the year. So, there are also going to be times where we just simply uproot the Haftarah altogether. We replace it with Nechama, right? After Tisha B'Av, for the 7 weeks after Tisha B'Av. So all we're interested in is in Nechama. And so the Haftarahs have nothing to do with the Parsha. They just have to do with Nechama. Okay. So this is the institution of Haftarah. When was it instituted? I can't tell you. But in other words, but certainly at some point before the Gemara. Because at the writing of the Gemara, clearly they're talking about the Haftarah. And so now that they're reading a section of Navi, so there's something called Maftir. Maftir is basically where we're going to be reading from Navi, but before we read from Navi, we're going to read another section of Torah. Okay, and Armin, I guess, Tosus discusses it here and on the bottom, is that we end up repeating the Psukim. In other words, because as the Gemara itself is going to indicate, this is one thing that's going to come out clear from the Gemara. Is that we just don't want to just simply read from the Navi, meaning we've been reading from the Torah, and now what we're going to do, and now we're going to read a section of Navi, we want there to be like a transition, meaning as almost like a covered a Torah issue. So what we want to do is we want to read a little bit of the Torah, and then we're going to read from the Navi. So with this little bit that we read from the Torah, it's called Maftir. Okay. So now that we're going to be reading a little bit of it, so the question now of the Gemara is as follows. So now that we have this thing called Maftir, where we're reading a little bit of the Torah, so can I count that as a aliyah? So we know, we've been learning now since the beginning of the Perek, that on Shabbos you need minimum seven aliyahs. So can I count Maftir as one of the aliyahs? That's the Gemara's question. So, Ma'u Shiyal Leminyan Shiva. So Rav Hun, Rav Yirmiyah, Abar Abba, Charamar Ola, V'Charamar Eino Ola. So the Gemara has a machlokus on this very issue. Machlokus amongst the Amoraim, whether Maftir could be counted as an aliyah. Now, the Gemara here gives a really straightforward and simple svara in terms of why you can count it. I'm reading it. Okay. Simple, straightforward. And the one who says that you can't count it towards one of the aliyahs is because of what Ula taught us. Okay. This is what I foreshadowed. And so Ula taught us is that why before reading from the Navi, so why are we going to be reading a section of the Torah? Maybe covenant Torah. Oh, because it's a covenant Torah. Meaning we don't want to just simply open up a Navi and start reading Navi. We want to first point out Torah is primacy, so therefore we'll read from the Torah, and then we'll read Navi. So the whole purpose of Maftir is covenant Torah. So that's why it can't be counted as an aliyah. V'kevin de mishum covenant Torah hu, l'minyan alo salik. Oh, so in other words, that it has a different function, and as a result of the fact that it has a different function, so therefore you can't count it as an aliyah. Okay. So what we have now is a machlokus amongst the Amoraim, whether Maftir can be counted as an aliyah. Meisvei. So the Gemara challenges, HaMaftir ben Navi. Lo yivchos me'asim vecha psukim keneged shiva shakar b'torah. Oh. So when you're doing the Haftarah, so you want minimum 21 psukim of Haftarah. Okay, not this Shabbos, next Shabbos. So next Shabbos, right, as Ashkenazim, you get yourself a break. So us Ashkenazim, so we're going to be reading both the fourth and fifth parak of Sefer Shoftim. Okay, just get comfortable. It has to be the longest Haftarah. So anyway, so the if I'm not mistaken, I think you only read the fifth parak. Okay, whatever. You'll fact check me. So fine. But minimum 21 psukim. Why? Because the number of aliyahs are 7. The minimum number of psukim in each aliyah is 3. 3 times 7, 21. So therefore, for Haftarah, which obviously they're drawing some sort of parallel between that which we read from the Navi and that which we read from the Chumash. So if we're going to be reading at least 21 psukim from Torah, so it should be a base minimum 21 psukim from Navi as well. Now, the Imisa says, V'arba havyan. So the Gemara says, now, if you want to tell me that Maftah should count as an aliyah, so what do we end up doing? So we end up reading 7 aliyahs, but we also do Maftah as well. So Maftah now should also be another 3. So now if I'm really looking for parallel between that which I read from the Torah and that which I read from Navi, so it should be 24. That's exactly the Gemara's question. V'imisa esrim v'arba havyan. So the Gemara says, no, kevin demishim kavod haTorah hu, kinegdo nami lo baye. So the Gemara says, no, because Maftir counts but doesn't count. Meaning, again, it has a different function. The function of Maftir is a kavod haTorah function. So since the function is kavod haTorah, so you don't have to count it in terms of the base minimum number of psukim as it relates to the Haftarah. Okay, Chanamar Ola, Chanamar Ein Ola. I will cite just the beginning of Tosfos, the fourth Tosfos on the Amud, before we turn to the next Amud. So, Pasuk Rabbeinu Tam de Kamelan Kamand Amar Ola. So Rabbeinu Tam paskins that, yeah, Maftar counts. Maftar counts as an Aliyah. Oh, okay. Ola Kachan Unog, Matanis Memincha, Vetishabav, Shashlishi Maftar. Okay, good. And so probably you notice that all this is based on Rabbeinu Tam. So you notice that you go to shul on a Tanan Sibor, and so what do? We read 3 aliyahs. That third aliyah is maftir. Same thing with Mincha and Yom Kippur. So we have 3 aliyahs. That third aliyah is maftir. Because we do paskin, says Rabbeinu Tam, like the Shita that says that maftir can count as an aliyah. V'chein b'yam ha-kippurim b'mincha. Ava b'shabasus v'yamim tov v'yam ha-kippurim shachrus ha-maftir lo have min ha-minyan dekem shemut ala husif aleim yicholim anu lasos min ha-genu aliba dekol ha-ama. So why on Shabbos do we have an extra aliyah for Maftir? Meaning if Maftir in fact counts as can count as an aliyah, so why not have Shvi also be Maftir as well? So Rabbeinu Tam says, because here we have a luxury. Because on Shabbos, what are you allowed to do? You're allowed to make a hosafa. So you know what? Even though we in principle, says Rabbeinu Tam, we do paskin like the Mandamer who says that it is Ola, that Maftir counts as an Aliyah, but on Shabbos, because we're allowed to make a Hosafa, we're going to do it. Why? Because then we'll get in both Shitas. Right? An interesting idea of Rabbeinu Tam. You see it throughout Rishonim. Here Rabbeinu Tam is saying it very clearly. If I can satisfy multiple positions, so why not? On Shabbos, you're allowed to make a Hosafa. So the one who holds Eino Ola, he'll be happy as well. Because now you'll get in the 7 aliyahs, and Maftir doesn't count. We add an extra aliyah on Shabbos, you're allowed to. Okay. Yeah, so again, it goes back to a discussion of whether or not you're allowed to make Hosefas on Yontif. Okay, good. But Rabbeinu Tam says that in principle we paskin that the Maftir does count as an aliyah, but on Shabbos we help ourselves to an extra aliyah because it's able to satisfy more than both of the positions. Okay. We're on the very top of the Amud Beis, Chav Gimel Amud Beis. Connect the Nami Labai. Maskif La Rava. Vare Olo Sechem Safu Delo Havinasim Vichad Vikarinan. So now we just learned the rule that for the Haftarah, you can't read less than 21 psukim. So hopefully you've been wondering, since we learned that rule, there are many Haftarahs that are less than 21 psukim. Right? Just moments earlier, I cited. Right, our minhag, which is that between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Hashanah, it's called Shivan and Nechemta. So that is 7 haftarahs, 7 consecutive haftarahs, where it's all nechama. Many of them are really short, much less than 21 psukim. The Gemara here happens to quote one haftarah. Okay, I did my crack research team. This is haftarah for Parshat Tzav. I wish I could tell you before my early morning research I knew that. I did not know that. Okay, anyway. Okay, I embarrassed myself enough today. So this is Haftarah for Tzav. So it's less than 21 psukim. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. You taught me a rule that the Haftarah has to have 21 psukim. And meanwhile, there are Haftarahs that are less than 21 psukim. So Vikarina, Shani Hasim, Desalik, and Yana. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you know what? We finished the subject matter. Meaning, so yes, we'd love 21 psukim, but if the theme is finished, if the subject is finished, if the parsha is finished, so we're not just going to add psukim. Okay, if you remember, if you recall, so Tosfos back in Chaf Aleph, so he says that explains our minhag. Our minhag on Purim is that before we read from the Megillah, so we read from the parsha of Vayavo Amalek. How many psukim is Vayavo Amalek? It's 9 psukim. 9 psukim. So what we do is that for 3 aliyahs, each one of them gets 3 psukim. The Gemara says you need 10 psukim. So Tosfos says same thing. Salkin Yana. What are you going to do? You're not going to start the next parsha. Meaning, okay, it finished. It finished after 9 psukim. So Tosfos uses this Gemara to help explain our minhag of only reading 9 psukim on Purim morning. Shani Hasim to Salkin Yana. Meanwhile, I'm telling you, there was a number of occasions where we're reading the Haftarah, we're 10 psukim in, and the Rav says, okay, that's enough. Okay, we're good. So the Gemara says, yeah, but you have to understand that you're not just reading the psukim, there's a Turgam in there as well. And so he's teaching. So everybody's hearing not only the pasuk and the navi, but also the torgamen as well. 10 psukim in, you're already hearing now 20 lines. Okay, good. We got it. We're good. So the rav makes that decision. But good. Did nivrav tachlifa bar shmuel lo shanu ala b'makum she'in torgamen. Ava makum she'ish torgamen posek. And the gemara says, okay, and we have a masorah like this as well, that when there's a Torgamon, so you can stop before 21 psukim. Okay. Ein porsen al shma. Yeah. Okay, let's go. Okay, we are on Chav Gimel Amud Beis, and we are starting now the next Mishnah, and the requirement of a minyan. Okay, so there are a number of occasions in halacha we're going to require a minyan. Our Mishnah is going to give us a collection of halachas where I need a minyan of 10 men. So ein porsen al shma, so when it comes to priestess of shma, I'll explain that better in just a moment. Ein ovrim lifnei ateva, that's what we call Shemoneh Esrei, Chazor Sashat. Ein nosen es kapeim, that's duchenim by Kohen. Ein korin betorah, that's kriyas Torah. Ein maftir menavi, that's haftorah. Ein nosen mamino moshav, that's a minhag which we no longer have. I'll come back to that later. Ein omrim birchos avelim, that's also a minhag we no longer have. I'll come back to that later. Tanchume avelim, birchos chasanim. Okay, that one we know. Ve'ein mezamnim, and that's zimun. Zimun v'shem Hashem. B'shem. Pachos be'as me'asara. So for all these halachas, you need a minyan, you need 10 men. Uvekakos tisha v'kawain, ve'adam kayyotze behem. And when appraising land, so you need an appraisal team of 10 people. 9 of them are made up of non-kohanim, and 1 is going to be made up of a kohen. And we're talking about the appraisal of land as it was dedicated to Hekdesh, and now we're going to redeem it, and we need an appraisal. So it has to be a team of 10, a beis din of 10, if you will. The word Beis Din over here I'm going to be using loosely because Beis Din has to be an odd number. This is an even number. It's an appraisal. And also, Adam. When you're appraising a person, you also need 10. An appraisal team of 10. Again, we're going to come back to that also at the end of this sugya. Okay, so for numerous halachas, you need a minyan. The first halacha of the Mishnah, porsen al shma. So what is that? So there are many ways to explain it, but as we do consistently throughout our daf, just for the sake of brevity and simplicity, I'm just going to present Rashi. But there are many, many ways to say it. I'm just saying over Rashi. Ein porsen al shma, Rashi writes. Min abal beis haknesos la'achar shekaro tzi bar shma. So let's say you have a minyan that comes to shul after shma was already said. So, omed echad v'omer kaddish, ubarchu ubarchu rishonu shebekriya shma. So there is a minyan that Rashi describes over here that is what our Mishnah is making reference to, where you say kaddish, you say baruchu, you say the bracha rishon of Shema, and porsin just simply means like bread that you break in half. Meaning, this is not a full tefillah b'tzibur, it's a half a tefillah b'tzibur. Okay, halbusha, as my mother would say. Okay, good. So that's a minhag that Rashi over here describes. So even though you're going to do this half chazaras hashatz or whatever it is exactly, but because you're saying Kaddish, you're saying Dvarim Shebekdusha, so therefore you need a minyan. Okay. Minahani Mili. So we start with the Gemara. Am Rabbi Chebar Abba, Am Rav Yochanan, Am Akrav, Minikdash Besoch B'nei Yisrael. So Kol Davar Shebekdusha Lo Yeh Pachos Me'asara. So the Pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim So it says v'nigdashti. So you have to sanctify yourself amongst Bnei Yisrael. It's in Parshas Zemor. Okay, anyway. So my mashma. So how do I know that besoch means 10? Meaning, how do I get to the number 10? So didn't Rabbi Chiyasi toch toch ksiv hacha v'nigdash besoch Bnei Yisrael ksiv hasi hibadlu mitoch ha'ida. Okay, so the toch over there in both create gzereshava. Yes, it's unusual that the gzereshava is being created from the meraglim. Now the meraglim are 10. Now I know they were 12, but two of them defected for good, and so that leaves us with just 10, and that's how we get to the number 10. Yes, it's an oddity that the entire source of a minion is coming from the meraglim. Okay, I'm not the first one who made that observation. Okay. Ve'ein osin mamun moshav pachos me asara. Now, mamun moshav cannot be done less than 10. So, mamun moshav, what is that? It's a minug that we no longer have. So, kevin debay lememar, amdu yikarim amodu. Shavu yikarim shavu. So, there was a minug back then where, as the procession of the funeral was going, so we have some form of this minug. Again, it kind of depends on and where you live and who's running the general levaya, but back in the day it was very formal, and not only was it very formal, but even the declarations that were said, the nusach over there was very formal. So amdu yikarim amdu, and so Rashi points out over here when you're using the term yikarim, so there has to be a quorum, it has to be 10 men, otherwise you're not using that language. Okay. So, batsim yasar, love arachara. Anything less than 10 men, it's just not appropriate language. So, you want to call this a halach, you want to call this a certain nihug, right? Derech eretz, if you will. Okay. Ein omrim birchas avelim a birchas chasanim. My birchas avelim. So, birchas rechava. So, there's something called birchas rechava. Okay, you're going to see this in the Gemara a couple of times. You're going to see it over here. We're going to see it together in Moi Katan. Anyway, there was a bracha that was extended. Da'am rav yisak, am rav yochanan, birchas avelim basar, vein avelim in a minyan. So the Birchus Avelim is going to require 10. Now, Birchus Avelim, what are we talking about over here? We're not talking about benching. Another halacha that we're unfamiliar with, because, again, unclear what happened. But in benching, there's a special Birchus Amazon that you say in the base aval. If you don't know what I'm talking about, most people don't. It's just simply not practiced nowadays. The Gemara discusses it. The Gemara in Brachos, in the 7th Perek. Anyway, but we're not even discussing that now. What we're discussing now is that a bracha was extended to the people who are sitting Shiva, and even the Menachem as well. A bracha to both. Rashi over here cites a nusach of the brachas. Okay, we don't say these brachas nowadays. What happened? I don't know. But anyway, the point of our Gemara is, you need a quorum, you need 10. When you are looking for the quorum, so the Avel is not counted towards the Minyan. Meaning the bracha that you're saying, presumably for the Menachem, for the ones who are giving Nechama, so you need 10 of them. And if 10 is... there are only 9 there, and there happens to be the avos there. He doesn't count towards this particular bracha. Birchas chasanim ba'asar v'chasanim min haminyan. Okay, birchas chasanim. So finally, we know what we're talking about over here. Okay, sheva brachas. So sheva brachas. So birchas chasanim. So there, you need a minyan. There, the chasan can be counted towards the minyan because he's included in the birchas chasanim. Eim azam nel amazim b'shem pachos me'asara kevim debay lameimer nevarach lelokenu. Benching, so when you're making a zimun, and you're using Shem Hashem in the zimun, so you need a minyan. Why? You're saying Shem Hashem, meaning normally when you're making zimun with 3 and above, so you're not saying Shem Hashem. You're just simply saying Nevarech Shachan Mishalo. But when it is now with a minyan, you say Elokeinu, so it's not Derech Eretz to say it, Shem Hashem, less than 10. HaKarkos Tisha V'Koin Adam Kayotze Behem Menani Mili. Appraisals need a team of 10 appraisers. So if you look at the parsha of appraisals, Behar Bechukosai, so you're going to see the word Kohen mentioned over there 10 occasions. Chad Legufe. Now the first Kohen is telling me that that of the team of 10, one of them has to be a Kohen. The Idach. Now because every other time, all 9 other times it says the word Kohen, so what is that called in Drusha language, that's what's called miut achar miut. So v'idach ha-miut achar miut, v'in miut achar miut, ela le-rabos. And so when you have, it's like multiplying negatives. So 2 negatives make a positive. So you have an exclusion followed immediately by another exclusion. So that is now an inclusion, which means now that the second person doesn't have to be a Kohen. So le-rabos tisha Yisraelim, v'chad Kohen. So that means the first one's a Kohen. Everyone else could be Yisrael in terms of the appraisal team. Ve'im ha'chamisha Kohanim v'chamisha Yisraelim. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Logistically, it should be your first Kohen is a Kohen. The next one is Mirach Amir, which should be Yisrael. Now the next one should be a Kohen. The next one should be Mirach Achamir. So the Gemara says, really, it should come out to be five and five. Five Kohanim, five non-Kohanim. So the Kasha, the Gemara says, okay, good. It's a good question. I don't have a good answer. So the Adam Kayotze Behem. So Adam Ikada. So now when you are appraising a person, so make sure you also have an appraisal team of 10 people. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? So I'm Rabbi Abba, Ba'omer Demei Alai. So I'll tell you what I'm talking about. A person makes a neder to the Beis HaMikdash where he's going to give his market value to the Beis HaMikdash. So Ditanya, Ha'omer Demei Alai, Shamanos Okevet Ve'evet Itkish Lekarkos. De'echsiv, Isna Chaltem, Osam Levnechem, Achrein L'Reshes Achuza. So when a person makes a pledge of his own market value to go to the Beis HaMikdash, so now all we need to do is just figure out his market value. So market value, what is my market value? So if I were to be sold on the market, so that's my market value. So in terms of appraising, so you get a team of 10 appraisers. So why? Because now that you are looking for your market value, now you're like an Eved vis-a-vis your market value, because that is a market value. And so an Eved is connected to Karka. So by Karka we need 10, so by an Eved we need 10. So when you're establishing your market value, so you need a team of 10 appraisers. Again, one of them being a Kohen, nine of them being non-Kohanim. Okay, perfect place, perfect timing. Let's just quickly recap. Let's review. Okay, we finished off yesterday's daf regarding the Nefilas Apayim. So Rav didn't do it in Shul. So why didn't he do it when he was in Bavel on Tan Sibra? He didn't do Nefilas Apayim. So the Gemara gives three proposals in terms of why Rav elected not to do Nefilas Apayim. Okay, even in the summary, I'm not going to go through all three. But anyway, that brought us all the way to Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. On the top of the Amud, we went once again over the aliyahs that are doled out on a weekday, on Chol HaMoed, on Yontif, Yom Kippur, and Shabbos. The Gemara just wanted to assign who is the author of our Mishnah. Seemingly, it's not Rabbi Shmuel. Seemingly, it's not Rabbi Kiva. Okay, the Gemara found another brisa where our Mishnah it goes like Ramazim. A lot of the Amud Aleph today went through the various significances of the numbers 3, 5, and 7. Eventually, we also find a remez for the number 6 as well. The Gemara never found a remez for the number 4. Tosfos was bothered by that. Anyway, as we move toward the bottom of the Amud, so who can get an aliyah? Everybody, but it's not derech eretz for women to get an aliyah. The maftir, can the maftir be counted as an aliyah? So the Gemara has a machlokas hamarayim on this very issue. We just cited the Rabbeinu Tam this morning. Rabbeinu Tam says that the maftir does count as an aliyah, but in Shabbos, because we could do a safas, so why not? So we'll add an extra one, so we do 7 aliyahs, and we do the maftir as well. The haftarah itself should be no less than 21 psukim, but then the Gemara says, but it can be. It can be less than 21 psukim, based on whether you finish the subject matter, based on whether the Rav said we had enough, coupled with the fact that there's a Torgerman over there, good. And then on the Amud Beis, we ran through it really quickly, but on the Amud Beis, so all the times in halacha where you do need a minyan for in order to facilitate various halachas.